What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Well, the holidays have come and gone once again, but if you've forgotten to get that special someone in your life a gift, well, Mint Mobile is extending their holiday offer of half off unlimited wireless. So here's the idea. You get it now. You call it an early present for next year. What do you have to lose?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Limited time 50% off regular price for new customers. Upfront payment required. $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12-month plan. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds may slow after 50 gigabytes per month when network is busy. See terms.
Hey, you're listening to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And today we are excited to have another portion of this little conglomerate that I've created over the, I don't know, I think I've been doing this 4 years. We call it Vortex Week. And what we do is I record 3 episodes of the Nine Finger Chronicles and dedicate 1 episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast to this Vortex Week. And so the first thing I want to say is, you know, obviously this episode is going to have a ton of value, but there's a lot of entertainment and education on some of the other podcasts that I've launched this week. The title that you'll be looking for, the titles, all start in Vortex Week. And so if you go to the Nine Finger Chronicles feed, you're going to find it. It's going to be, I've already launched 2 this week. I launch another one on Friday. So that's a total of 4 episodes dedicated to Vortex. And not all of them are product driven. This one, Hunting Gear Podcast, obviously is product driven. But the other 3 that I put out are more informative. They're more hunter stories. They're more hunter profiles. The first one that we did this week was actually a fun one because it's something that I'm not good at, nor I don't know if I really have any drive to become a better shot with a gun at this moment in my life. I know that in the future I will, I bet. But this was all about becoming a better shot. And the cool thing about this episode was that I didn't have any clue what I was doing. And so I just asked the questions and let the professional answer them. So that's a good one to go listen to. Wednesday's episode was with my buddy Graham and Eric. They're Vortex employees. They went on a South Dakota hunt this past year and had a blast, found some success. And then the episode on Friday is going to be a good one. It's with Maggie. She works in their Oh, shit. She works in their marketing department. She runs some of their social media stuff, and she's big into fishing. So that conversation revolves a lot around fishing, growing up in the outdoors, being kind of like a tomboy figure, and it's a really good episode. So this is Vortex Week. Today we have on Mark Boardman and Ryan Muckenhern of Vortex. These two guys are the product junkies over there, and you're going to get a lot of insight today about the new products coming from Vortex that have already been launched or that are going to be launched here very soon. So let's see here. That's it. Really good episode coming your way. I do have to send a quick thank you to two brands. First is Reveal Trail Cameras. If you're looking for a cell camera that is easy to use up, that pairs nicely with an app that comes straight to your phone, look no further than Reveal Trail Cameras. Literally put batteries in, download an app, scan a QR code, and you are ready to go. Very simple, very affordable, very effective cell cams. Reveal, go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new 3.0 versions of the Reveal. Next is Code Blue Sense. Code Blue Sense is a brand that I'm starting to take a liking to for a couple reasons. One, first and foremost, I love their Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit. I pair that with a Reveal trail camera, and it allows me to take inventory of the deer on my property, along with understanding deer behavior and deer movement throughout the entire year, not just the hunting season. And, you know, it has its strategy benefits too. So, You build a mock scrape, deer come to it, they investigate it, you get a picture of them, it goes right to your phone. On top of that, they offer a variety of real and synthetic urines and scents. They offer scent elimination products. I do have a discount code, and that discount code is NFC20, and that's going to get you 20% off. Go visit CodeBlueSense.com and check all that out. And I do have my own company, FullSneakGear.com. Go check that out. Last but not least, this Vortex Week. So go check out VortexOptics.com. Let's get into today's episode. Shit goes down outside of... Are you recording? Okay. Shit goes down outside of Vortex HQ. Mm-hmm. Comms go down. Mm-hmm. All right. How long is Vortex employees surviving with the food, the water, the ammo that you guys have in-house before you guys start making trips for supplies?
Is the water system still functioning in town?
I guess that's a question I have for you. Is the water system still functioning here?
Depending if electricity goes down. Yeah,
I don't know.
Yep, it should, because that's all pressure-based. There's a water tower here, so technically you would have some transient level of pressure. Depending on the rainfall, so we have two ponds on site. Mm-hmm. I believe the deepest is about 6 feet. And then it fills up. And then there's some running water down the valley. So we can provide like cover fire from elevated position. We could do water runs. Yeah. And I suppose it depends on like if the dead are coming to us.
Yeah.
I believe one of the first things that we would do is we'd implement a perimeter. And then two, we would have like a loot and check program in place, where as the dead came, we would sort that problem out, and then we would do a loot and check.
See if they had any valuables.
Correct.
On them.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't... Dan, did you even specify zombie apocalypse?
I said Walking Dead zombies.
Yeah.
Now, World War Z zombies, they move faster.
They're quick.
They're very quick.
And they have learned to climb, like ants.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But Brad Pitt's here, so it's fine. It's a great question. We fired 785,000 rounds on a range last year.
That's a lot.
Yep.
Do you guys keep track of every bullet that is shot at the edge?
Try to. Yeah.
Wow.
Try to.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, this, ladies and gentlemen, is the Hunting Gear Podcast, and this is one of the episodes of Vortex Week that we have kind of made an annual thing. Man, I don't know. How many Vortex Weeks have there been? I think like three or four.
That sounds about right.
Vortex Weeks, where I come up to Vortex HQ. And
not enough, by the way. Yeah, not enough.
Not enough. Okay, well, I'll talk to my wife, see if I can get a little more on my leash and make it happen some more often. But we have
some interesting things that have already gone down today. And we're here with Mark Boardman, and we're here with Ryan Muckenhern. And I got to spend some time with Ryan today outfitting a 410 and a 20-gauge Mossberg that I've had forever with some new hardware for turkey season. And this is where I want to elaborate a little bit on why we chose what we chose for these guns. As we all know, Vortex is a optics manufacturer, amongst other things. And I have two kids now. I got a 10-year-old and I got a 12-year-old. And I want to make turkey hunting not only fun for them, but easy for them as far as shooting, to try to get game down so they are successful and they enjoy it. And so the first task that we had this morning was outfitting these two shotguns. And we'll start off with a 410.
Yeah.
All right. We found this out at the range. It's a 15 to 20 yard gun for lethality.
Sure.
Okay. Anything more than that, probably not going to kill a turkey.
Sure. What were you shooting for loads? Is it TSS or lead? Or?
Nope, it's not TSS.
Okay.
I think it was probably lead.
Yeah, and there's ways to, I mean, switching to a different shot is going to change the dynamic there.
Yeah.
And especially in 410, like sub gauges are really interesting because they inspire a very useful tool, especially for like a youth or experienced shooter, but they are on the marginal side of performance. And it's not because they're not powerful, it's just they lack pellet count.
Yeah.
However, if you get clever with the shot that you select, like Mark and I were doing some testing with 410, and this was a really cool thing that we discovered. We were using Apex TSS in 410, and we were shooting out of a little Mossberg pump. And the Apex TSS outperformed a 12-gauge non-TSS loading at 50 yards.
Oh, wow.
We had a higher pellet.
I think they were fives, right?
Yep. A five magnum high performance turkey load.
Okay.
Out of the 12-gauge versus the TSS number 9.5s.
Mm-hmm.
And the TSS 9.5s, better pattern density, more pellets on target, very high energy yield. And TSS is special because it penetrates like crazy.
Yeah.
It was a swarm of angry bees.
A TSS turkey load out of a 410 transforms it into a completely different animal than what you were working with this morning.
Okay.
Provided you've got the right load and the right choke.
Right. So this is awesome to know
because,
as I've mentioned to you both several times, I'm not that gun guy. Right. And we were joking earlier today when you were working on the 410, one of the customer service reps comes in and he asks you a question, and he asked you the question all in numbers. Yeah. It was a sentence, but it was all numbers. Right. It was like 44, 410, 80, 30, 7, 1. And you answered in all numbers. And I was like, gee, I'm in the Matrix. I felt like I was in the Matrix because it was all code.
Dan's like, is there a niner in there?
Yeah. So I didn't hear draw length, or I didn't hear poundage or shit like that. So it's something that I'm getting better at, especially as the kids get older and I get older. And I'm going to be shooting more guns the older I get. The kids, I want to have higher success with them. So guns are definitely in their future. And so the 410.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us, Ryan, why you picked the Crossfire.
Sure.
For the 410, and what are the benefits of it for this 410? And I gave you some parameters.
Yeah.
It was, I need something easy to use for a 10-year-old, basically.
Yep. So the Crossfire, it's not just for youth. I'm going to say that right off the bat. So I own several of these, and I have them mounted on turkey guns, 44 Magnum revolver, a little 9mm carbine, a little AR, like PDW gun, and some 22s.
Mm-hmm.
And on a turkey gun, I think they really come into stride, and for a few reasons. One, we have it pictured here with the tall mount on it. This would be better for something like an AR or an AR contemporary. We ship it with a short mount. The short mount is perfect for your little 410 because it's lowering that optic to an appropriate height to mount up, you know, cleverly. So this is like value add right away. So it's compatible with the system that you had. But what I really think is outstanding about this individual model, above others in our line even, is this manual brightness control. And I know this sounds like kind of an easy thing to take or leave, but with cold fingers, as we sometimes run into, hunting turkeys, and with little hands, fishing for a tiny button on the side of a unit, if a power level is not bright enough, can be frustrating, can take time, and takes like finite motor skill to execute.
Yeah.
That large, it's about the diameter of a quarter, that large knob, like you as dad sitting next to youngster in the blind or under the tree can quickly reach over and give it a spin, or that youngster in a very simple, gross motor skill maneuver can turn that brightness up with very little trouble.
Yeah.
That big knob, it's got knurling on it. That purchase on there is really quite slick and easy to do. You can turn that up. I think that feature alone kind of expounds upon its merit.
Yeah.
And I've had, like, here in Wisconsin, when our first season turkey tags, like that season opens, it's a mixed bag. Like, we can be hunting 70, like it's going to be 75 degrees on Friday. Next week, we're going to be in the 30s again.
I've hunted first season. I killed a bird, and I want to say 9 inches of fresh pow, as they might say, on the ski hill. Mm-hmm. And I drove back home. A drive that would have taken me normally 2 hours, I think, took me in excess of 4 hours, and it was the worst snowstorm I've driven in Wisconsin, and that was mid-April.
Mid-April. Yep.
Correct. And we've had 12 inches of snow in May here. Yeah. So you never know. It's a mixed bag. And I've had a first-season turkey hunt. Actually, when we had just released this and we were prototyping another dot, I was running the prototype, so I dismounted this from my Benelli, and I put this other dot on there. I had two birds work in right at first light. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're off limb, and they are coming in hot. And they get peeled away by a bunch of hens. And I kind of forgot about them because I thought, like, okay, they're gone. They're not coming over there. One of those rascals shows back up, like, 2.5 hours later. Well, my light condition has gone from dim to now bright.
Yeah.
And I didn't amend the brightness on that dot. And it was cold. It was in the 20s. And I hunt with, a lot of times, like mechanics gloves.
Yep.
And this bird sounds off at random. And I don't know if he like heard me move and thought I was like scratching or whatever. And he's like danger close. It's like, oh no. And so like my gun is not on my leg where I usually have it. Like I got to fish that out. And like I pivot to get in place. And I look down and my dot's invisible. And he pow again. And I'm like, oh God. And so I go to push the button, and like the glove is preventing me from making a tactile push on that button. Now I'm faced with the worst sound a hunter with either a whitetail or a turkey in close is. That's Velcro, because I have to undo the Velcro and I have to get the glove off. And so like ease that up, and I had to bite the glove and spit it out and then push the button. And then I got the brightness up, and the turkey never came in anyway. He just decided that that wasn't his day. So this inspires a great deal of confidence to me, just the ability to hit that and rip that.
I've been running the Spark Solar on my setup, Ryan. But to your point, so it's a trade-off, right? Like I like the solar aspect of it. But for turkey hunting, the ability to find that knob, to be able to use a gross motor skill to adjust it, less fishing around equals less movement. If you're trying to, you know, if you are trying to maybe get that, find the buttons with the glove on or something like that, and you can also be a little bit more subtle with it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not having to like look or lean, and not to say that like, oh my, you know, I feel like now I'm doing one of those infomercials, like, are you tired of fishing around for buttons and like, you know, blowing my bangs straight up. But there's some,
I just could envision him with long hair.
just exasperated once again.
Cascading pots and pans coming out.
Opening up a closet door and like all these soccer balls fall on top of you. Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst.
The situation I brought on myself.
Has this ever happened
again
to you? Yeah.
But, I mean, there's something to this, you know, quotation mark, analog, rotary dial of illumination that really does lend itself to being extremely practical in the woods. And I know, Ryan, for that reason, this is one of our lesser expensive
It is dots. Our most affordable. Totally.
And to your original point, yeah. It's not one that you, this is a good starter dot, or this is a good one for use. It's like, no, this is just a really good dot at a great price that a lot of people are going to find extremely useful.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I mentioned, right? And so like I'm bringing this to the table, and I believe earlier we tried to get, was it the Viper on that gun, or what was the other option?
Yeah, we were thinking, you know, could we put, or no, the Defender ST.
Defender ST, yep.
Correct.
And so I went with the Crossfire because I feel it is necessary. Like a lot of people talk about, and it would have been easy for me to go, give me the best thing for this gun. And I didn't want that because the 410 that this is sitting on is not an expensive gun.
Sure.
It's a Shields basically special.
Yep.
Is where I bought it. And I want something that is also affordable on it.
Yep.
So I can say, hey, listen, this setup is $500 to get started.
Yep.
It comes with a great optic and it's a great gun. Yep. And so it's a win.
And like, it's price point aside.
Yeah.
And I think honestly, sometimes people are like a little leery on that.
Yeah.
If you audit the technology inside of this, it's very much the same as some of our higher end red dots that have more, we'll say, digital features. So things like solar assist, motion activation, an auto off feature. It's as stripped down from an electronics feature standpoint as possible, which is where a lot of that value saving comes from, or money saving comes from. And actually in that simplicity makes it a very attractive option. So like, don't let the price point inspire cheap.
Yeah.
That's not what it is. It's stripped to its baseline functionality. And in some instances that is the best solution.
Yeah.
And I think especially for your youngsters, you know, it's like if we have a button matrix that controls functions of the dot, like they would then have to know what that sequence of buttons to push is, like push both to turn it off, push one and hold it to lock it out, push one and hold it to unlock it.
Yeah.
You know, this is the switch goes from 0 to 11.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to know.
Even for an adult,
yep.
It's simplicity,
yep.
particularly in the heat of the moment,
yep. right.
can be a big factor in the price category.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
I will add, because part of this discussion is new products. This is a new color of the Crossfire Red Dot. So we've had it for a while in black. This is the tan version. And then we also have, Ryan, a green dot version.
We got them.
In black. So the green is only available in black right now.
So it's not, you can't switch it from red to green?
It would correct. Be, you would buy the model that in the color that you wanted.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay. Options.
But, I mean, Ryan, I mean, and you field a lot more calls exponentially than I do, but, like, what's your take on the green and folks who are looking for that option?
I would say I'm not going to say that red has a distinct advantage over green or green has a distinct advantage over red.
No. Mm-hmm.
I think that it is a preference issue. Like, some people have stated that they see less of like, the detrimental effects of astigmatism with a green dot than they do a red. And some people believe that green shows up better on certain backdrops. And I will say, like, indisputably, I think it's a better option against like a white or cream colored backdrop. So think like snow or sand. Green does have a good contrast there. In certain lighting conditions, like I'm thinking of some of those hunts that I've had where, you know, if I'm hunting a spring field edge and it was a cornfield and there's still stock and husks that are out there, and especially in like an evening hunt when that is that real golden yellow.
God, you're making me want to hit the...
I know,
man.
All right, let's go.
Hit the turkey wood.
Yes, let's go.
Why don't you... Because you know what? You look down that row and you see a three-pack of Tommies. And you got that one up front, and it's just swaying left to right, you know? And in the evening when they get the deep red head and that iridescence of their black, oh, yeah. They're coming into roost, maybe that final strut before they call it a day.
We shoot them in the face.
Yeah, that's right. That green will be outstanding on there. Now, as far as the astigmatic effect goes, like I have an astigmatism. I argue every human being walking the planet has a varying degree of astigmatism. Unfortunately for me, every dot looks like a cluster of grapes or a sea urchin or you know, some sort of other undersea crustacean or mollusk. So I was awarded no points when I started monkeying with the green ones.
Let me ask you this question. Do you find it unusable then?
Oh, certainly not. There. No. And, you know, for a long time, I thought that when I looked at a dot and didn't see this perfectly concentric circle, I thought it was a fault of the dot. And then I started working with and playing with some extraordinarily high-end dots, like stuff that costs close to a grand. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, those aren't round either. Oh, it's a me thing. One was neither better or worse from that perspective. But it really does drive like personal preference. If you pick one of these up at your retailer and you're like, my eye is grabbed by green, and like, yeah, I see a red dot. Like, I think the obvious choice then is the green because it's like, wow, right now to you.
Yeah.
If we look at the spirit of these optics and like what they're designed for, they're designed for you to be able to pick them up lightning fast. That's the one to go with. If it's green for you, it's green and run green. And it's nice to have, you know, some versatility in there. Henry Ford always said you could have it any color you want as long as it's black. and we stuck with that for a long time. But what's wrong with a little variety, you know?
Right.
Well, and enough folks would ask, hey, do you have it in green? I wish you had this in green.
Yep.
Enough that it warrants, like, hey, let's provide that.
I will say this. When I have a red dot in front of me, I do get blur around the circle that I don't get with green.
Okay. Sure.
So I don't know if it's probably my eyes, that I get a crisp green circle, even in high when I crank it up versus the red, and the brighter it gets, it loses a circle and turns more into like a blur.
Sure. And that's astigmatism, and that's your eye and how it's handling the color that's coming through it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
now I know what I have.
Yeah.
And now I'm got to go to a doctor.
I'm not a doctor, but
we will diagnose you.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So I think that's a great choice.
Yes.
And I think it's going to make shooting a turkey in the face easier for my son, because that's ultimately, and I think for me, it's going to be good because I'll be he'll be sitting between my legs. It'll be an arm reach thing for me. And he's just going to worry about putting the dot on their face.
Yep.
The next gun we had, and this was the parameter of this one, was first off, it's something that I'm going to use.
Yep.
But my daughter, since last year she had the 410. This year she's bumping up to 20 gauge. Because I don't want to buy another shotgun, another 410. But she's bumping up to the 20 gauge. She's 5 pounds taller, 20 pounds heavier this year. She's going to be able to handle it on a bipod.
Yeah.
And I said, I want something that is going to be easy for her.
Yep.
And looks cool, whatever, for me as well. And what did we choose?
We went the Viper. So, which is kind of neat because that particular gun, that's an old Mossberg 500.
Yep.
And I bet that gun, you know, early 90s, late 80s, probably.
Yep.
And so it's undrilled, untapped. It's a blank canvas. And whatever you were going to do on it, save for some fairly eclectic, like adapting circumstances where you could clamp a dot to the rib, which works. I've hunted. I've actually killed birds with rib mounts. I don't love them for a couple of reasons, but they are functional.
Yep.
You had the ability to kind of tailor this any direction you chose.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were going to put holes in it anyways. We had it drilled and tapped to accept what I call the Benelli pattern rail. So it would be like a one-piece Picatinny rail that would fit, say, a Super Black Eagle 2 or any other contemporary from Benelli that's drilled and tapped. So you could at some point in time revert to a one-piece rail if you wanted to mount a scope on it during the slug season.
Yep.
Or we would go with the new Viper enclosed red dot.
Yes.
Which is a really, really novel design that we've been working on for a couple of years here at the shop to especially cater to the shotgun hunter for turkeys.
Yes.
Now, I want to say up front, this is not just a turkey dot.
Yeah.
If you decided you were going to want to run a red dot for slugs, have at.
Yeah.
If you had a Ruger 10/22 and you want to mount one on, have at. If you had a Marlin 1895 lever gun and 45/70,
yeah,
have at. We mounted them up on some Ruger Americans the other day, which was really neat. So bolt guns chambered in. We've got one in 450 Bushmaster that has one on there. So this is all Iowa legal center fire hunting stuff. And if you hunt tight covered, there's nothing faster than a red dot.
Yep.
Wildly versatile. In any event, we have this gun drilled and tapped, and it mounts in 45 seconds.
Yeah.
We plunge four holes into the gun. We utilize three of them. The fourth is going to be redundant. And again, we can come back to it later with the rail if need be. Very versatile mounting platform on the Viper enclosed dot. It has one locating hole and then what I call two sliders. So the slider is going to allow you, for guns especially that are already drilled and tapped, accommodate whatever the manufacturer decided was the best placement for screws.
Yeah.
And super clever system. So Marky's got it held up here. This is the front slider here. The fasteners that we send with it, and we send an absolute truckload of fasteners, varying thread pitches. There's a 648, an 836, an 840, an M4 by 0.7, and possibly some more in there to accommodate a huge depth and breadth of you know, factory drilled and tapped options, or make your selection based on your needs and preferences. We went with the M4 on this drill and tap for some allowances later on down the road, maybe, but it accommodates just about anything. And it also goes to show that if you don't have a gun that's drilled and tapped, a quick trip to the gunsmith sorts that problem out.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, how long did that take you guys this morning?
Oh, man, to get those four holes put in, I believe, I mean, he had more time into switching bits than anything. It was literally drill four holes and then tap them, and then you're put the gun back together and you're good to go.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now, I do have a question here.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just talking from a visual standpoint.
Yep.
The Crossfire is a circle.
Yep.
The Viper is a square.
Yeah.
Is there a difference? Why this difference? Does it mean anything, or is it just it's a square, dude? That's it.
It does mean something. And there's it's a two-part answer. I'm not going to say it depends, but it does depend on the design. So convention dictates a circular lens. And for a long time, this was it. This is what you had. And whether it was an enclosed system, and I'll speak to a very famous optic that is kind of the grandfather of most modern projection-type red dots, would be like the aim point. Whether it's a T1, which was one of their original micro dots, or the Comp series, they were always circular lenses. And then others like the Seymours of the era, like the original, Seymour, like slide ride red dots that we saw a lot on competition pistols, circular lens. The geometric lens, where it kind of took on a cross-section of a bread loaf shape or a square shape, isn't really necessarily new, because it's been around for a minute, like probably 20 years now, but it's becoming a far more accepted form factor, and I'm seeing this more and more often. From a durability standpoint, if you're going to make a small dot and make it tough, often it lends itself more useful to this shape than it would just a circle. Once you start getting into the really little dots. And so we borrowed a lot of our runway and our engineering know-how in durability and packaged it into this. So if you look at a Viper enclosed shotgun dot and you set it next to, say, our Defender ST, there's a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. We learned a lot about like mechanical design, structural integrity, how glass like shatters and how glass breaks and from like impact points, and designed our lens elements, to withstand a lot of bumps and bangs or drops or throws or whatever.
A lot of durability testing went into those dots that,
oh yeah,
lent itself to knowledge gain for this one.
And that outcome of that says, hey, a square, like, yep. Are we talking durability? From a durability standpoint, a square is going to be better than this?
Can be.
Can be. Okay.
Depending.
Yeah.
Then there's also like a whole nother side of this that is the optoelectrical layout. So like to present a dot cleanly to an eye so that you have like this as clean a dot as you can possibly have it. Lens shape, lens diameter, distance from emitter to lens surface, which is also going to control dot size to a degree. And then distortion or lack thereof is also dictated by lens shape or can be dictated by lens shape. So there's a lot that went into that as well, like making the best looking dot, the strongest dot, you know, we'll call that the mechanical system to this, and then presenting the dot in a way that you can have, say, in the multi-reticle variant of this, geometry. So now we don't just have dot. But we can have dot, circle, 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 yeah. Big, circle, small, or any combination thereof. Lens shape also plays into that. But when we're looking at surface area too, so if you audit the lens diameter of the Crossfire and you audit the lens size of the Viper, this is bigger. Mm-hmm. You have more viewing window in effectively the same space or similar to the same space. You end up with a less obtrusive housing, and the whole name of the game behind this dot, and I think really one of its really neat and meritable talking points, is the presentation of the optic relative to the top of the receiver or the top of your rib on a shotgun. This is one of the lowest presentations you can get before you start removing material from your receiver and recessing the dot into it.
Okay, so yeah. You're talking...
Eczema is unpredictable, but you can flare less with Ebglyss, a once-monthly treatment for moderate to severe eczema. After an initial four-month or longer dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks, and most of those people maintained skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 mg per 2 mL injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Very technical. Now. Yeah. So you would say just low profile.
Yep, 100%.
Okay.
Yep.
Low profile. Like,
yep. When we mounted it up and you shouldered it, you could see your mid-rib bead and you could see your front bead as well as your rib in the same visual field in the window. Whereas... you do not get that same presentation out of this, and that's mostly a height constraint.
Yeah,
that's even with the low mount.
Yeah.
I mean, works famously. Yep. Like, so I'm not going to tell a person, no, that's not going to work for you. But your presentation will be slightly different with the Viper enclosed shotgun red dot.
Yeah.
You're going to get the look and the feel of, you know, kind of that more solid cheek weld where you're really, you know, bearing down on the shotgun like you'd be normally used to doing. And that's one thing that I think with this, number one, it allows you to do that. And if a person has been maybe hesitant about going to a dot because they're like, I don't really like the way it feels, this is going to feel a lot like your traditional cheek weld.
Yeah.
Right. I like them. I like them both. Right. I think, you know, for my son on the Crossfire, not having that in the picture window would potentially distract him.
Sure.
So without that in there, it's just a dot.
Yep.
Perfect red dot. My daughter, she's a little smarter, and she'll be able to understand that the red dot is, you know, where you need to put it. So, and I like it. I'll just, from a look standpoint, I got an old shotgun with this new technology sitting right on top of it. It looks badass.
Yeah.
It just looks badass.
They're neat.
Yeah. The functionality behind it, the thing that I like about this, and I know you haven't mentioned it yet, but is the inactivity.
Yeah.
So the red dot is on when it's moving, but when you set it down, it shuts off after 10 minutes. The crossfire I've left on before, put it away, picked it up the next day, went to go turn it on, realized it was on, and I'm like, okay, well, I got to shut that off, right? And I know the battery life in there lasts a long, long time, but, you know, I'd hate to put it away and then try to turn it on next season and it's not there.
Yeah.
And that the Viper takes care of that problem.
It's a built-in fail safe. Yeah. And then, you know, of course, with the auto on too, you don't have to worry about like, oh, I've been, you know, sitting at this tree and I had my gun leaning against, you know, X for 10 minutes. And I mean, you pick that shotgun up and it's going to be ready to go when you are.
The amount of motion required is laughably small.
Yeah.
So same technology borrowed from our Defender Series handgun dots.
Yeah.
And again, not just for handguns, but like if I was wearing one, breathing in my chair, it would be on.
Okay.
Yeah. So if it's on the table, and let's say it's off right now going like this, it's on.
Yeah.
And so,
sensitive.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So long story short, I'm ready to go slap some turkeys around this spring with what I got on those guns.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to getting out there and chasing some toms with her.
And I mean, that dot was, you know, the Viper enclosed shotgun red dot, purpose built for that application,
right?
You know, and with that universal integrated mount, it's just such an easy plug and play with so many shotguns.
Yeah. All right. So, in the past 365 days, you guys unloaded new products in 2024. I mean, I felt like, you know, I was here for the media summit, and then the previous time we were here going through all the red dots seemed to be the main focus coming out of last year. Is that customers? Like, how do you identify, like, hey, the world wants more red dots? Like, how do you identify that, and why do you bring that to market?
I think it speaks to the versatility of the red dot design. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ryan, we've seen it. It went from a tactical AR thing to we're seeing them, you know, now they're the norm rather than the exception on pistols.
Yeah.
We're seeing them infiltrate the turkey market heavily.
I'd say that's probably, aside from handguns, the turkey market is like the fastest growing red dot segment.
Right.
And maybe, I mean, to Mark's point, they're now like an acceptable or required standard on a pistol. With turkey guns, now it's the number of people that will come in here in the next 2 to 4 weeks with a Mossberg 835, a Benelli Super Black Eagle, a Franke Affinity, a Stoger M3500. Can we put a dot on this? Mm-hmm. Will be outstanding. It will be akin to what we see in the fall when ladies and gentlemen are coming in with their deer rifles.
Yeah.
And it's cool to see. And to Mark's point as well, like, I remember kind of dating myself a little bit, being behind the counter at a gun shop when the Smith & Wesson M&P Core came out and when the FN FNX 45 came out. These were the two first dots to market. I believe the FN was actually the first that were factory accepting of red dots. And a bet I would have lost my life savings on is like every pistol moving forward will be dictated by the consumer public to be accepting of a dot.
So you're saying that the red dot itself is so versatile that manufacturers are redesigning guns
to
hold them.
Yes.
Right.
And at first it was just those two and it was like, man, this is too weird. Like, no way.
Yeah.
And now, like, find me a major pistol manufacturer that does not have a provision on some of their models.
Well, and along with that, too, dot technology and durability has gotten way better over time to accommodate that.
Yeah. And and that's also part of one of the reasons that you saw so many releases from us is we were we've been working like the Defender project was years and years of very, very intense testing and development and going back to the drawing board to bring the best foot forward that we had in dot durability, and especially for the fighting gun.
Yeah.
The ancillary benefit is that us as hunters now have a mega durable, super reliable, tech-filled piece of equipment that we can slap on our turkey guns, on our revolvers, on our lever guns, on our deer rifles. And yeah, so a lot of that was like us reinvigorating our foothold as an electro-optics manufacturer.
Do you see a lot that happening more and more often now where an accessory is so popular that the firearm manufacturer changes its design to be able to incorporate that?
Threaded barrels.
Yeah.
For suppressors.
Yeah.
You know, suppressor ownership is it's never been higher. It could be a little higher.
By one, at least.
You're not a suppressor fan?
Oh, a huge fan. I just keep getting other things like deer tags and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
I do need, it's going to happen.
But, you know, I can remember, again, dating myself, having to affix a muzzle brake to a rifle was an ordeal because there was like only a handful of shops that were really, in my area anyways, really good at threading a barrel half 28 or 5/8 24. And it was like, are you sure you want to do this? You want to cut threads under the end of your muzzle. And now as you're shopping for rifles, especially the number of them coming with threaded muzzles is starting to overtake those that do not. And those that do not are usually going to be a gun that's like a classic firearm or like a classic throwback. So great example, Winchester Model 70, African. You know, no threaded muzzle. But you go look at the contemporaries from CVA, from Mossberg, from Ruger, from Tika now. Tika's finally catching up, by the way. Love the brand. Slow on threaded muzzles. Almost all the Browning X-Bolts. The Winchesters in the Model 70s and the XPRs are starting to come threaded. Most of the Weatherbys.
I mean, Ryan, we did that budget rifle roundup.
Yep. All but one.
All but one came with a threaded muzzle. And, I'll say, not only are muzzles... is it becoming the standard for the muzzle to be threaded? We're seeing rifle form factor or variants of a manufacturer or an offering, let's say, coming with a 20-inch barrel, an 18-inch barrel, a 16-inch barrel to keep the overall form factor and package, you know, more easily wielded in the field with the suppressor on it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just happening everywhere then, because as you see also in the archery world, everything is now becoming customizable.
Yep.
Right.
And somewhat standardized, which is really cool, because there's some neat attachments in the archery market that used to live with just manufacturer A, B, or C.
Yeah.
And then there was aftermarket support that says, hey, you know, for instance, you shoot a Matthews, I shoot a Bowtech. I want the tech that fits the Matthews to fit my Bowtech. I have to build an adapter for it. I have to go to a machine shop, and somebody who's really smart and good at shaping metal needs to make this finagling thing. And now there's some standardization. And we're seeing that in the firearms community, especially with like dot mounting. And you know, there's a lot of different optics manufacturers out there. And we're all starting to kind of agree on, I'm not going to call it a quote standard, but like for this size pistol, it should be this footprint.
Yeah.
And everybody's kind of fallen in line with that. And it's better for everybody, better for, I think, like the consumer base has never had a better opportunity to pick from the smattering and swath of great optics manufacturers to find what they like the best or what suits their needs best. And they don't have to do backflips over figuring out how to attach it to their gun.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So there's that. Next. I want to back up a bit, and so we did talk a little bit about all of the hype around the red dots, but I mean, for Vortex as a whole, I just feel like you guys released more than normal new products last year. Mm-hmm. And did all of that turn out to your liking? I mean, were they good releases? Were they well received?
I think they were great releases and extremely well received. And, you know, speaking to that, that was just in the area where we saw some room for us to grow, to expand and get better. And the product development team worked extremely hard on it, as Ryan pointed out earlier. And what we're seeing is the result of that.
Yeah.
Is there more coming out of Vortex? Is there more customer-driven product development, or is it market-driven, or is it dudes sitting around down at the range going, you know, what would be cool? What seems to drive what you guys come out with more?
I'd say all of the above.
Yeah, it's not one specific vein or avenue. Mm-hmm. It is all three examples that you came up with, or even more than that. Like we can audit. Here's a great example. We released our Viper HDs in 24. So this is an update to a very long standing rifle scope series, and it did a couple things. It packaged some features from, you know, like Kissin' Cousin models in our line. It eliminated some redundancies, and it improved upon the weak points in the line. And some of that was us looking at those redundancies. And you can come about this in a number of different ways. You can look at sales numbers and being like, hey, you know, we move a bunch of these, we don't move a bunch of these. They have similar features, but this one's got one more, so this one's just kind of redundant.
Yeah.
How do we gobble that up and make, you know, pour gas on that fire? Or feedback from customers, like, I'm a huge fan of our Viper HS 2.5-10, now a legacy optic, but rabid fan of that optic. Critics of that have said it doesn't have illumination. And, you know, here's why it's not just us saying, you know, it'd be a great idea. I'm not a big fan of illumination in rifle scopes. I don't personally find it useful, or at least I haven't had a situation in which, I'd be like, man, if I had illumination, I could have taken that shot. That's never happened to me. Customers that are hunting in different places and hunting different things at different times of the year in you know, different field conditions than I am are saying, hey,
yeah,
I could have made that shot if I could have seen that the center point of that reticle. Why wasn't this illuminated?
Yeah.
Well, we have to respond to that in an appropriate way by adding illumination to that product. That's how they're successful in the field. So we incorporate illumination into design. We up the optical quality. We increase things like field of view, travel range. You know, we monkey and pour on, again, gas onto proverbial fires from a durability standpoint. How do we make the best product to fit the customer needs that we have? And so a lot of it is driven by consumer feedback. Like that's been the backbone of Vortex since forever.
Mm-hmm. We always have our ears open.
Yes.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
But we also have some very talented, very smart people working on these projects here. We have passionate end users here from everything from Midwest hunting, Western hunting,
Upland, Turkey,
multi-gun, tactical shotgun, F-class, PRS. I mean, you name it, you can find a significant group of people who are interested in all of those things and everything else under the sun.
Yeah.
Right.
And so you take all of that and you like combine it together, and that's how you end up with product development, product improvement, and then some super novel ideas. Like, nobody really asked us to come out with an integrated mount red dot for a shotgun.
Yeah,
that wasn't, so far as I'm aware, on the talking table. Instead, we were looking at how are customers using our products or friends of ours in the industries that make other optics. How are they utilizing them on a shotgun, and then what are the challenges for that customer when they're doing it? One of them was like deck height. Mm-hmm. So if we throw a Picatinny rail, like on your 410, you've got like almost 0.6 inch of height that's burned up by just a mounting interface, and then you have the mounting interface of the optic. Mm-hmm. And so now we've added, you know, 6.5, 7/10, sometimes in extreme cases, 3/4 inch of just stuff before we even get you to your optic.
Yeah.
How do you solve the problem of form factor, cheek weld, recoil mitigation, gun control? you put the mount into the optic and it all just sits down there low.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a fun smattering. It's really cool to hang out with those guys and to kick ideas around when they have, you know, regular meetings on it. Does anybody have any cool ideas, or is anybody hearing any customer feedback, or are we missing the boat on something? And we get into a round table, kind of a jam session, and go over it. And some of the ideas, like, I can't catch them fast enough as they leave my mouth, because when I say them, I'm like,
yeah,
I'm the only one who wants that, you know, and reel them back in. And
yeah.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, so staying on the topic of scopes and red dots and things like that, what else is new for 2025 so far?
You know, the hard part is when you put the date on it, because we don't necessarily do releases at January 1st.
Right.
Or like in the industry, like traditionally you would see manufacturers dumping everything out on the table around January 15th, January 20th, mm-hmm. which would have been SHOT Show.
Yep.
We stopped doing that a couple years back.
A few years ago. Yeah. And really, it's to benefit of our dealers, to our customers, to us. I mean, we'd find that you'd drop the product, announce it, create this buzz, but it could be months until it actually, you know, hits retailer shelves. So it created a disconnect there.
Right.
So we have more of a, I guess what you could say is like almost like a just-in-time model where it's like we have our ducks in a row. It's like, hey, this product is going to be ready by X date.
Yeah.
We generally try to time that so it's in time for maybe the upcoming season that it might be, associated with or useful for. We get our dealer set up. We get our marketing materials and it's just kind of then, hit the go button and
that's why
we are.
I got I brought my muzzleloader in. It needs a scope as well. And so that release isn't until late August, September timeframe. And so that's a late season muzzleloader for me, December timeframe. And so we'll have another conversation about that scope when it comes out later in the year. So I kind of like that because I feel like as an end user, if you're telling me about all these great things that are happening and it's not even hunting season.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's where I get frustrated with the bow manufacturers. I'm like, don't you think you should release these products in June, July so people can buy them before the season starts and not after the season's over with already? So you're releasing a product to the public and then they have to remain hype about it for 10 months, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that's a smart move.
And it allows us to put a spotlight on things and give it the shine that it deserves.
Right. Yeah. Right. Other than, anything else that we need to talk about?
And this is where I was kind of going with this. Like, example on the table that Mark's pointing to is the new Razor HD, UHD 8x32. Mm-hmm. That was a late last year release. And so it's like, I don't ever think about it in terms of like model year release. It's like now broken into like quarters.
Right.
Or seasons. Mark said that really good. Season release. So that was a great and stellar product launch there. We've released a couple new compact spotting scopes. There's this whole theme going on. I call it Compact Optics Revolution, where we're getting more and more and more adept optical systems in smaller and smaller packages. and which I'm just terribly excited about. I couldn't I couldn't be more crazy about.
Whenever I can shave space and weight,
yeah,
I generally try to do that. And these new Razer UHD 8 and 10 by 32s, I mean, they're a true top-tier optic in a compact, lightweight package. And it's really the only bino that I've been carrying in the Midwest. Like, I carry different things when I go out west. You could certainly run this binocular out west Ryan does. In fact, I did a backpack hunt this last year that I did consider using these. I'm like, ooh, I could shave the weight. And probably could have had the same outcome of the hunt had I been using them.
Sure.
So, but yeah, it is just a phenomenal binocular. And for the person who does want, you know, a top tier optic, but they want that compact design, man, this is a tough one to beat, particularly, you know, and then if you're in the Midwest, I don't know. I'm not sure if there's a finer option out there.
No, and I'm so enamored with these personally. The first hunt that I took them on, they were still in prototype phase yet. Mm-hmm. It was an archery pronghorn hunt a couple years back, and we had a 842 UHD, like the bigger brother of this, and then the 832. It wasn't even a final production either. Yeah. And sitting and glassing with them in, you know, the big wide open plains of the West, I made an immediate statement to myself. I was like, well, I don't need to carry the 42 millimeter anymore. I don't need the extra 12 ounces or 10 ounces of weight, the extra size in the harness. Like, I can go with the smaller, more buttoned up thing, which we can certainly appreciate as archers. And this has now become my go-to for everything.
Yeah.
There are instances in which, like, it would be advantageous for me to carry a 12 by 50. And maybe you did on that bear hunt.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Like, if I'm in gigantic country, and especially if I'm rifle hunting or mountainous region, like, that 12 is a hard bargain to turn down. Like, I ran 12s this year for my rifle pronghorn hunt. I left my spotting scope. I didn't even bring one to the state of Wyoming. I just brought my 12s. And there's a time and a place for that. But these are really special. And the compact spotting scopes now that we've announced over the past, I would say over the past year and a half, like, fleshing the spotting scope line out with the compact editions, all three of them have been absolutely cherry. And yeah. I'm just enamored with how well they turned out. Actually, I wish I would have had a Crossfire 12 to 36 here, because that thing can't get talked about enough from a spotting scope perspective.
So who's the demographic for these compact spotting scopes? Just ounce counters, backcountry guys?
It's changing.
Yeah.
It's changing. It used to be that the guy cutting his toothbrush in half was that crowd.
Yeah.
And now, and again, this speaks to something Mark touched on earlier about they're just getting so good that I can remember 20 years ago, the only way you could get a more brilliant image was with a larger objective lens. That's the only way you could get a brighter image.
Yeah.
And things started to change. And convention and pendulum swing, where you have a perceived need and then you're met with a defined reality. Yep. In that, like, when I started hunting the West, the first thing I did is I bought this Gonzo telescope, because I thought that I'm going to be sitting up on this quiet hilltop and I'm going to be cutting apart these huge swaths of land with this Hubble telescope and checking DNA sequences on mule deer at 6 miles. The reality is it just doesn't work like that.
No.
And so you learn some lessons and you realize that actually what's better is a really, really efficient optical design.
Yeah.
That yields a brilliant image within the confines of physics.
Right.
And, like, you can only go so high in magnification before you hit a wall and you start amplifying in-air distortion.
Yeah.
And you can have all the light in the world you want, but at too high a level of magnification, now all of a sudden your image becomes kind of cheesy. And people are coming to terms with that and realizing, like, hey, for what I'm doing in this environment, I don't need a 27-60.
Yeah.
What I need is a really efficient, lightweight, packable spotter.
Yeah.
The bear hunt that Mark was on, you killed yours on the fifth day.
Mm-hmm.
Hard country.
Mm-hmm.
Hard country. Could you imagine? I mean, certainly the image would have been useful out of a 27-60 razor. The burden would be untenable.
Well, I mean, and that was a case where, and some of that's due to just the nature of bear hunting. And when they pop, it, you know, they can be intermingled in brush and definitely hard to spot. But oftentimes when they pop out, they pop out. So that was a case where I had a 12 by 50 UHD and a tripod. Yep. And that's what I carried on that hunt. Yep. I didn't, I forewent even the compact spotter because, again, I was trying to cut space and weight. But it's just the right tools for the job. It's like, okay, for this hunt, this, this, and this. For this hunt, this, this, and this. I might be in country where maybe I'm hunting coos deer and I am trying to glass miles away. Boom, let's bring out, you know, the 85 millimeter razor because that's the tool for the job.
Yeah.
But it just depends on where you're going and what you're doing.
Yeah.
But going back to Ryan's earlier point, these compact spotters are just so incredibly capable, and because they are so good optically and because of their size and weight, you want to take it with you.
Right. And I'll be completely honest, this past year, day one through four, I took spotter with me. Day five through eight, no, it got left in the truck.
Right? Weight, size,
weight.
Yep.
100% weight.
Correct.
And I'm just like, I want to just not deal with it today. And to be honest with you.
But sometimes you actually still do have that need for a spotter and you're just like, I just don't want to. So that's where these compacts, because they are the one that you will take with you.
Yep. I 100% agree. Like, that's something, like, if I have to leave it because I'm tired of carrying it, then I'm going to be looking for something else. And that looks like
it doesn't do you any good at the truck. That's for sure.
No. And that's kind of another reason why we're crazy about those is now you have a potential disparity with the product that you own, that you spent money on.
100%.
And it's like, was that the right choice?
Yep.
And this is why we're offering, you know, a small, intermediate, and large, so that, and we would like to consider ourselves subject matter experts on it. So this is where you like call us and be like, hey, does this work in X, Y, or Z scenario?
Right.
We want to get you index matched with that product so that you don't run into that situation.
Yeah.
If you would have called and been like, I'm vehicle based, I'm horse based, or I've got an ATV, UTV, and like I'm parking my horse and I'm walking to a glassing knob, you know, 100 yards away. Oh, you're going to love having an 85 millimeter objective.
Yeah.
And no harm nor foul. Like you're not necessarily carrying that burden.
Yeah. 27 to 60. Sign me up. Let's go.
If you're like, nope, I'm living out of my pack for 8 days. Or I've got a base camp and I'm hiking up 3 miles a day and then hiking back. Like, let me sell you and spell you the merits of a 27 ounce spotting scope.
And then, and that said, there's guys that go, no, I'll take the size and weight penalty.
Sure.
And I'm, because I need that and I want that, and I'll pack it anywhere I go.
Right. You know what? Your guys are going to think I'm lazy now, but I have been taking my spotter with me way more over my last three trips to South Dakota because I bought an e-bike.
I'll tell you that
helps with weight savings.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah. That can change, some decisions along the way.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
And this is a great statement because, like, e-bikes up until maybe like 5 years ago were weird.
Yeah.
And then they've exploded in popularity. They've gotten way more reliable. They've come down in price.
Battery life longer.
Yep. And now they've become a very obtainable tool. That will change the product types that people carry into the field.
Yep.
And you'll see then another shift somewhere.
Right.
Like, oh, transportation modes just changed.
Yep.
And now these things that we weren't thinking about being useful are suddenly the best tools for the job.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, there are so many things that can change that. And so many things that can dictate why a particular style of product or a particular product line becomes, you know, certainly viable, or it gets moved into a bit of obscurity.
Yep.
So
absolutely. All right. So now I've been playing around the last couple minutes with this glass pack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to be honest with you guys. Don't get mad at me. When I saw this at the table for the new product thing, I have a bino harness and a little compartment here for my spotting scope that I've matched, and I feel very confident in it, and it works great for me. And I saw this and I played around with it, and I'm just like, ugh. Like, I was like, right? Damn. Well, something happened. Just wait. Let me finish before you crucify me.
Put the knife away.
So something happened to that, and I had to switch Binohard. Because I said to myself, man, I feel bad because I get paid by Vortex to represent your brand, whatever. And so something happened to that Bino harness, and I started using this. I hooked up the rangefinder packet or little compartment to it. I got the, got it all hooked up, got it fitting. I got in the tree stand, hanging from the saddle this year, and whitetails tromping around Kansas, South Dakota. And I was like, I'm eating my words. Dude, this thing is badass.
Yeah.
It's a solid harness.
This right here is what worried me.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, sure.
Because when, opening it up, the lid staying down or creeping up, and it was, like, kind of halfway, or if I was in a stock, maybe it would slide forward and my binos might fall out or some shit like that. Never happened once. And so this product made me eat my own words. Right. And so I'll tell you, I don't know why that something like this is so important to me. I think a lot of it has to do with, I beat the shit out of my equipment. I mean, and you can see my old pair of binoculars that I brought in to give to the VIP, the warranty
team. The old war horse.
Yep. It just beat to shit. And that's how I treat all my equipment. And it survived and it didn't cause me any issues. And as both of you know, if you're not thinking about the product in a hunt, that means it's working.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's doing what it's supposed to do. And I wasn't thinking about it. And so on the car ride home from South Dakota, this was in my driver's seat. And I was like, you know what? This thing's badass. Like the stiffness of it in the back, but almost like a, I don't know what you guys would call how loosely this fits over the top of the binos. It doesn't look like it's secure, but it doesn't move.
And it is adjustable,
yeah.
To a degree as well. So you can adjust those tensioners. But yeah, Dan, I mean, it's like you said, I mean, it's a solid binocular harness. It's the Glass Pack Pro.
Yep.
And we introduced a bunch of accessories along with it to go with it, integrate with it. So it is a whole
system.
Binocular
yep.
system. You've got the hand muff, you've got
holster.
The pistol holster, multiple pockets, that can be attached in various fashions and really just to customize it.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
To your kit, how you're running it, where you want it, what side you want it on,
yep,
all the things, and it's been working really well.
So the bear spray pouch, yep, that's fine. If you got to go, go.
Well, I'm not going to go until we're done,
dude. You got kids to pick up. We're almost done. If you want to leave, you can leave.
I don't want to leave.
Okay, well then
we'll... I was trying to be subtle.
Oh, well, I'm not subtle, dude.
Mark said he had to go.
Do we have to...
You got... Dan, that was my attempt at being subtle. We could have cut that whole thing out.
It's all good, dude. Hey, you got kids, right?
I do have to go pick up my daughter.
Exactly. So we're getting close to the end, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to say something real quick about the bear spray pouch. I didn't use it for bear spray. I used it for screw-in hooks and stuff for when you're ultra mobile, setting up a lot of the saddles have the pouches on the hip.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have this pouch on your chest, just right here, all your screw-in stuff right here, maybe an extra little bow rope in here, I can stuff a lot of things in this, and I'm not having to reach down and blindly look for something. It's right in front of me. So, FYI to all the mobile guys out there. So, and this is on the other side, so it sits like this.
Yep.
Yep. The hand muff I don't have, but that's going to be a good addition to
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Sit right there. Yep. Yeah, buddy. Dude, we covered a lot today.
We did, man. Yeah. I mean, it's one of my favorite things. That's why I didn't want to go. We're talking about optics and hunting and all my favorite things.
What, like the old time TV shows where, like, the guys were like, they did it again. You know, like whatever the bow manufacturers would.
Yeah.
It's like, Hoyt did it again this year with all new blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean?
Looks like Dan and the Vortex guys have wrapped up another good one.
Exactly. So, I mean, just another, I talk a lot about the quality of Vortex, but the people, right? That's something that I sent a reel to Graham, and it was a joke because in another podcast, I talk about how important the people are at businesses and companies and things. And if you have good people, then your products are just the cherry on top of all that stuff. And I was like, I haven't met a douchebag that has worked at Vortex Optics yet. And that means something.
It's a pretty good track record.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, all my connections within Vortex are douchebag free. And so I'm very happy that you guys aren't douchebags, I guess.
Me too, Dan. Me too. Thank you. That's a very good, nice compliment.
Yeah, there you go. So thank you guys very much for hopping on and filling us in and all this cool stuff and all the, helping me out with the turkey. The guys down at the range today helped me sight in my shotguns. They did a great job down there. And, dude, had a blast as always. So
very cool. Well, thank you, Dan. It's always fun.
Yep, yep. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.